Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a program that reflects on life from a spiritual and secular perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share that love with others. As usual, we begin each week with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. Hundreds of them have been written by a friend of mine who wrote them after reflecting on sacred scripture, and my hope is that this story will help you to focus your heart and mind, whatever you've been doing today, on our topic for this evening, and I'll introduce the guest soon, a book titled The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. But first, the story of faith and imagination. The men sat silently around the fire. It was a good opportunity for them to ask Jesus questions. Peter had told many people how wise Jesus was. He can answer any of your questions, he told them. And so Peter brought an old man considered to be wise to Jesus. This man had given Judas many coins for the poor. As he sat next to the fire, he too remained silent like the others, because it was a time to pray and reflect on what had happened that day. They were also waiting for Jesus to raise his hand as a sign they could now ask him questions or say whatever they wanted. The old wise man looked at Peter, who patted his hand and said quietly, "Wait until he raises his hand." When Jesus did raise his hand, the man quickly said, "I have watched you while you seem to work many different miracles. Why do you do this? Is it because you want people to follow you or the words of your Father? Do you do it to obtain coins to feed the hungry and the poor? Or do you do this to make yourself appear like a god?" Jesus slowly turned toward the man and answered, My friend, if I were able to influence people to hear the word of my Father so that they might change their ways and see the light, would that be so wrong? It would be a miracle if I could open the hearts and minds of men, women, and children." The old wise man thought for a while and replied, "Yes, but it is your name they speak in the crowds. Then Jesus pointed toward his disciples and said, many are given thoughts and words to give to others, inspirational thoughts and words to be passed on from generation to generation. I tell you this, my friend, people will remember me and the words I have spoken. But these words and ideas are themselves miracles in their own way, because they're like a key that opens the mind, the heart, and the soul, so that one may do what is right and what is good. Remember, my friend, we are here for a short time. Life itself is a miracle. Death is a gift which enables us to return home. Then Jesus looked down at the fire, began to stoke it, and said, words are like these flames. You must add more branches to them to keep the fire burning. So too, many people must listen to the word of the Father and spread it, and then many miracles will happen. You shall see. You shall see. Our guest writes at the beginning of his book, again titled The Miracle Book. If you're reading these words right now, you probably need a miracle. I have no idea what kind of miracle you need. Are you facing surgery, perhaps? Have the doctors discovered a malignant tumor growing somewhere in your body? Has your mother or sister or daughter been diagnosed with a life-threatening illness? Maybe the miracle you need is financial in nature. Maybe you can't make your mortgage payments and you're about to lose your home. Maybe you need a big break in your career or you're facing an audit or a potential scandal. Maybe you're struggling to pay your bills. Is it your job that's killing you? Is your boss about to pass you over again? Or maybe you have serious family problems. Is your son using drugs? Is your marriage falling apart? Are you struggling with a compulsive habit or addiction? Or maybe you're just unhappy and anxiety-ridden and at the end of your rope. So many people in the world are suffering, but they don't know how to go about asking God for help in a way that He will respond positively. They beg God, plead with Him, negotiate with Him, promise Him that they will change their ways if only He will grant them this one request. But if God fails to answer their prayer in the way they want, they lose faith in Him or get angry at Him and fall into despair. There must be a better place. The author of the book and these words is Anthony Stefano. He's the best-selling author of 30 Christian books for adults and children. His work has been published in 18 countries and 12 languages. He has hosted two television series and appeared on many national radio and TV programs. Anthony DiStefano, welcome to Amplify. Not only did you just write this book, but you have another one coming up very soon, don't you?
Well, I always have a book coming out.
Oh, you do? Good for you.
I write for adults and for children. In fact, I have, this is my seventh book, nonfiction book for adults. And I have about 20 books for children, believe it or not.
Wow.
So I have a book coming out for on the true meaning of Halloween, and it's called All Hallows Eve. And it's an attempt to bring back the spiritual meaning to that holiday. And I also have a children's book coming out called The Sparrow Who Fell to the Ground, based on Jesus's parable about the sparrow who fell to the ground. And then he said, you're worth more than many sparrows.
Yes.
So I've always got something coming out. And next year, I think I'm going to have a book on purgatory, the Catholic doctrine of purgatory. So plenty of things in the works, Father.
Thank you. You write that this whole book, this present book, the miracle book, hinges on a riddle. Tell us about a little bit about that, the riddle and how it hinges on it.
Well, you know, we hear it said all the time that miracles happen every day, don't we? I mean, that's a very almost cliche expression. And yet most of us know from experience that when we pray for a miracle, we don't usually get the miracle we're asking for. So what's the deal? What statement is true? And I think that the answer is both statements are true. If you use the strict Christian definition of a miracle, which is a supernatural intervention by God in the natural order of things, like, for instance, the parting of the Red Sea or the overnight disappearance of a malignant tumor without any treatment whatsoever, then yes, those miracles are very rare. But if you're talking about miracles in a more general way, which we can define as an extraordinary answer to prayer that goes against the laws of statistics, let's say, but it unfolds through perfectly natural means. Like, for instance, someone who doesn't have any money and who's about to lose his house, he prays for a miracle, and then suddenly he receives the exact amount he needs through some inheritance or some other kind of gift that he wasn't expecting. Those kinds of crazy, quote-unquote, coincidences, they do happen all the time, and they're from God. They're part of his divine plan, part of his providence, and they're answers to prayer, prayers that God has heard from all eternity. But strictly speaking, they're not true, strict miracles. So it's not really a riddle or a contradiction to say that miracles are rare, but that they also happen all the time. It just depends on the definition of miracle you're using, and my book discusses both types.
Yes. You point out that there's that obtaining a miracle is both easy and difficult, and that it involves a mysterious divine paradox. What's the divine paradox?
Well, you know, a paradox is something that seems to contradict itself, a statement or an idea that seems to contradict itself on the surface, but it actually reveals a deeper kind of truth. For instance, everybody knows the paradox, less is more, or the only constant is change, you know, or the closer you look, the less you see, and on and on and on. Christianity itself is filled with paradoxes. You know, the first shall be last and the last shall be first.
Yes.
God is one, but God is three. Christ is fully God and fully man. Those aren't just poetic ideas. They reflect the reality that God is an infinite being and that we're just finite creatures. We can only understand bits of God's infinite truth a little bit at a time. And sometimes those little bits of truth that we see, they might look like they contradict each other.
Yes.
But in reality, we just can't see the whole truth yet because it's too big for us to see. So how does that fit into this subject of miracles? Well, in the Gospels, as you know very well, Jesus makes some pretty powerful promises. He says things like, ask and it will be given to you. And if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. Those seem to be very bold, clear promises. And yet we know, as we just said before, that even at times, many times, even the most faith-filled people don't receive the things that they pray for. Why? What I suggest in this book is that these promises of Christ, while 100% accurate and true, because they're from the mouth of God and God can't lie, they aren't so straightforward as they seem. They're really paradoxes. They involve embracing pairs of truth that seem to contradict each other, but they're actually meant to be held simultaneously, which can be hard to do. And there's seven of these miracle paradoxes that I speak about in this book. And they are, if you want me to list them, spoken prayer versus the deep prayer of our soul. The benefits of being afraid versus the need for courage. The need for persistent faith versus the need for a decisive faith. Those seem to contradict each other. The need for self-reliance versus the need to surrender completely to God. The power of dying to yourself versus the power of living your best self. And two more, the need to focus on our personal relationship with God versus the need to be part of a community of believers. And finally, the importance of precision in prayer, telling God exactly what we need versus the need for radical openness to God's will. Those are seven seemingly contradictory propositions, and I discuss each one of those in my book. And what I say is that if we try to embrace those paradoxes, we'll be doing all that we can do personally to obtain the miraculous from God.
And you point out that your book assumes that we're already believers and that we're open to believing, and you say, you write, perhaps something we can do to increase the chances that God will say yes to us, or at least answer us in a way that satisfies our hearts, alleviates our anxiety, and gives us true and abiding peace. And you, a little bit further, you point out the point of the book is, I believe there are indeed things you can do to increase the likelihood of obtaining either a miracle or an extraordinary answer to prayer. I'm going to help you to do everything in your power to get the miracle you need. Bear in mind, I'm not guaranteeing the miracle itself. I'm guaranteeing you the best possible way of getting it.
That's absolutely right, because, you know, I'm a, you know, as your listeners can hear from listening to me for just 2 minutes, I'm a New Yorker. You know, you can tell, unfortunately, from my nasal New York accent, and I'm a skeptical New Yorker. You know, I understand mm-hmm. I understand skepticism, and I grew up, you know, for many years as an agnostic, and I've always been allergic to any kind of superstition. And indeed, if you're a Christian or if you're a believer of any kind, you're supposed to be skeptical of anything that smells like magic. And that's why I don't promise magic formulas in this book. That's why I go out of my way to say that God isn't a vending machine. You don't put in a specific request and a miracle automatically pops out like a candy bar. That's not the way God works. Okay, he's not interested in that kind of transactional relationship. He wants a deep relationship, a real relationship. However, and it's a big however, it's a biblical fact that miracles are part of our faith. Jesus performed miracles all the time. He made bold promises about them. And the bottom line is millions and millions of people in the world believe in miracles, not because they're fools, not because they're superstitious, not because they're members of some cult, mm-hmm. but because they have faith in God, and sometimes because they've actually seen things happen with their own eyes that can't be explained. So I'm not selling anything in this book. My invitation to people is simply to be open. No need to check your brains at the door, but at the same time, don't slam the door shut. At least give God a chance to surprise you.
Right. Just what is a miracle? You believe that it has two meanings.
That's right. As I said before, there's a strict definition of the word miracle, which is a supernatural intervention by God in the natural order of things, like the parting of the Red Sea or something, or I mentioned before the overnight disappearance of a tumor without any kind of chemotherapy, without any kind of treatment, and that happens, you know. Or there's a generic definition of miracle, which is an extraordinary answer to prayer that goes against all kinds of odds, against the odds. Like I said before, someone who needs a lot of money and wins the lottery. Well, winning the lottery is a million to one shot, but people do win the lottery. So it's not, strictly speaking, an intervention by God in the natural order of things. It's just part of God's plan, which God has had throughout history to answer your prayer. So there are a lot of miracles that happen every day if you're using that generic definition. But a strict miracle, one that involves some radical intervention by God in the natural order of things, those are rare.
And I like the quote you have from C.S. Lewis, "The divine art of miracles is not an art of suspending the pattern to which events conform, but finding new events into the new pattern."
Yes, if I could only, and God yes. respects the laws of nature. You know, he created them. He created the universe and everything in it. So, and he created the laws of physics. You know, he created the laws of chemistry. He created the laws of human physiology. So when he interferes with those laws and performs a miracle, he doesn't often break them blatantly by suspending the natural order. He interacts with them in a way that changes the outcome of a particular situation. And I say in the book, that sounds very complicated, but it's not. Human beings do something similar all the time. If the weather's cold and rainy, we don't try to magically raise the temperature before leaving our homes. What we do is we put on a coat and a hat to keep us warm and dry. So we sort of interfere with nature in a manner of speaking, but we don't break any meteorological laws. Well, God has much greater power than we do, so he has a much greater ability to supplement the laws of nature and achieve his aims in a very seamless, beautiful, elegant way.
You write, the more generic definition of the word, quote-unquote, miracle, something extraordinary that happens as a result of prayer, but is explainable by natural events and by secondary causes. What is needed then for someone or something to qualify as a miracle?
Well, again, if you're using the generic definition of miracle, and my book treats generic miracles, you know, when something happens that's outside of the laws of statistics, when something happens and you say about it, wow, that didn't come from me. You know, I didn't do something to make that happen. It happened as a result of various things that I can see were natural. I can't prove that God worked the miracle, but it's nothing that I did. And that happens all the time to us. There's all kinds of, you know, there's a saying that a coincidence is God's way of being anonymous. And that's very true. Those kinds of miracles happen all the time. So as I said, you there are the generic miracles, and then there is the strict definition of the word, which is like, for instance, a miracle at Lourdes, which has to go through a whole process that the church has of, you know, investigating it to make sure that there was a real supernatural intervention in nature by God.
Let me read us out to the first break that we need to take, reading from the book, the miracle book. St. Thomas Aquinas said that our prayers are a means through which God has ordained certain effects. In other words, our prayers do not change God's will, but, quote-unquote, help his will to come to pass. God uses our prayers, like our actions, to assist him in carrying forward his divine plan. The point is that from all eternity, God has seen your prayers. That's something very fascinating just to think about. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be right back to continue. Amplify, where if you're just tuning in, our guest is Anthony DeStefano, who has written a book, among many books and more to come, titled The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. You write, Anthony, the more we learn about life and Christian spirituality and the theology of miracles, the more we see the importance of the concept of paradoxes, which are many in life. Tell us about the concept of paradoxes.
As I said earlier, a paradox is a statement that seems very much like a contradiction. The closer you look, the less you see, and so on. And Christianity, you know, if you're a Christian, you will see that the religion is filled with these paradoxes, these seeming contradictions. We believe in the Trinity. We believe that God is one, but at the same time, we believe he's three. How could that be? That seems like a contradiction. But we know it's not. It's a mystery. It's paradoxical. Christ is fully man, but Christ is fully God. How can that be? Isn't he half and half? No, he's both. He's fully man. Seems like a contradiction. So how can that be? The reason why they exist and so often they exist in our religion, especially Christianity, is because we believe that God is infinite. We can never understand God. He's totally infinite, and we're just little teeny creatures. There's no way we could possibly understand every bit of God. There's just too much. The only thing we can do is understand little bits of God, a little bit at a time, because he's infinite and we're finite. And sometimes those little pieces of truth that we know might seem like contradictions, but they're not. In reality, it's just that we can't see everything yet. We have to wait for until we get to heaven for that. And even when we're in heaven, we won't be able to see the whole infinite truth of God because we'll still be finite. He's just too big for us to see. So by embracing paradoxes, we can actually come closer to appreciating the mystery and the wonder of God. So that's why. And the reason why this ties into miracles so much is that Jesus said some very powerful things about miracles. He made some very big promises, and yet sometimes they don't seem to come true. And the reason is because they're not just straight out statements. They're really paradoxes. They involve embracing two different truths that seem to be contradictions, and holding them simultaneously. Like, for instance, the idea that we have to have persistent faith, that we have to keep asking God for things if we want them, versus the need that we have a decisive faith, that we make a decision once and for all to believe in God's goodness. Those two things seem like they're contradictions. It's like stepping on the gas and the brakes at the same time, but they're actually not contradictions. They have to both be embraced at the same time. And the thing is, sometimes people out there listening to this program, they may, because of their personality type, their disposition, because of the different gifts God has given them, they may lean towards one side of the paradox. You know, and that's the same as like leaning on just one side of a seesaw. You know, you have to have energy on both sides. And when you have energy on both sides, that's when the seesaw starts to move and it generates some power. So what many of us do in the spiritual life is we just focus on one thing and we forget the other things that seem to contradict. We focus on the thing that we're good at. For instance, being self-reliant is something that we need to do. We need to be, but at the same time, we have to surrender to God. Now, those two things seem like they're contradictory, but they're not. They both have to be done at the same time, and that's when you do that. That's when miracles start to happen. And so, in my book, I go over these various paradoxes one at a time, and showing readers how they can embrace these paradoxes effectively. And that's when, as I said, that's when miraculous things start to happen.
Right. That's the very structure of what you had talked about earlier. What are some of the things, and you have about 7 or 9 quotes, you have some of the things that Jesus said about miracles in the Gospels. Select one of them so we can move on into a little deeper into the book.
Well, I mean, he said... you know, ask and you shall, you know, seek and you shall find, you know, a knock and the door will be open to you, you know, ask and you'll be answered. You know, I mean, he's basically saying, if you pray, God is going to answer you. I'm going to answer you. And yet sometimes we do that and we're not answered. So what does that mean? Does that mean that Jesus was lying or that he was wrong? That can't be. Jesus is God, and God never lies. So what did he mean by that when he said that? And so, for instance, I speak and I answer that question in the book by going over one of the paradoxes, you know, and because that statement, ask and it will be given to you, you know, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be open to you, is actually paradoxical because it involves the paradox of the spoken prayer, the prayers that we ask, the way we knock on the door, the way that we seek, between those things and between what we really want in the deep part of our soul, those things don't always match what we say and what we really want and need. So I spend a whole chapter going over that paradox of spoken prayer versus soul prayer.
Yes.
I'll be happy to go over it now, but that's the gist of one of Jesus' statements that are paradoxical.
Right. You write that if you need a miracle, you must first humble yourself and ask God for help. And you write also, many of us don't realize that asking God for something in prayer involves another paradox. The heartfelt desires we express in prayer are not always in line with the true desires of our souls.
Oh, that's right. I mean, you know, our spoken prayers, what we say, what comes out of our mouth, they may be very passionate. They may be sincere. They may be heartfelt. But they don't always reflect our real desires and our real needs. In other words, we may think we know what we want. Let's say a restored relationship with someone, or a son or daughter making it into a prestigious college, or winning the lottery, or even being cured of some disease. But our souls might be longing for something even more profound, like peace, or freedom, or security, or love, or significance, that's a big one, or joy, or healing from wounds we don't even realize we have. So for instance, if you're praying to get a certain job at a big company, what you really might be praying for is what you think that job is going to give you, like greater financial freedom, or a feeling of importance, or a way to advance your career. But if you knew that that job was going to make your life miserable and frustrated, you wouldn't be praying for it, right? Well, God's not only can see the future, God is in the future. He knows what that will do. And so, you know, we often experience problems in our life, and we become afraid and anxious, and then we come up with solutions to those problems, and naturally, we pray to God to overcome those problems in the exact way that we've solved them. But in God's wisdom, He listens not only to the words that come out of our mouths, but also to the silent cry of our souls. That's the tension, spoken prayer versus soul prayer. And the paradox is that if God sees that the two are not aligned, He will always answer the deeper, truer request, not the superficial one. Jesus says in the Gospels, "What father would give his child a scorpion or a snake when he was asking for a fish or an egg?" In other words, what father would give his child something bad when he was asking for something good? Well, sometimes we don't even realize that what we're asking for is scorpions and snakes. And being a good father, God doesn't give them to us. He looks past our words and tries to give us what we truly want. And sometimes that takes time to arrange.
Right. And to amplify on that, you write that God did not say no to my prayer. With divine wisdom, He looked into my soul for what I really wanted.
That happened to me. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a heart surgeon. I prayed, even though I wasn't very religious, I prayed for that, you know. I did not get to be a doctor. I didn't even go to medical school. A couple of little things got in the way, like organic chemistry and integral calculus. But I was very disappointed, and I was mad at God. And I thought, oh, God just didn't answer my prayer. You know, that happened a few times in my life. But what I didn't realize was that God had something better in mind for me. He looked past my words. He saw that I didn't really want to be a doctor. I didn't really want to be a surgeon. Knowing what I know now, I've been to so many hospitals in my life. I know you have too.
Yes.
I would have hated all the blood. I would have hated the bureaucracy. I would have hated the long, grueling hours. I would have been miserable as a surgeon. I would have been happy helping people, but I would have been miserable as a surgeon. What I found out later in my life when I was in my 30s was that after I read a book by C.S. Lewis called The Screwtape Letters, and I realized that, well, I have a writing talent. Maybe I could write books like this, not as good as C.S. Lewis, but maybe I could write books that help people. So maybe what God was maybe what I wanted to be, maybe what I was really praying for in my soul wasn't to be a doctor, it was to be a healer. And you can heal with words sometimes, not just with a scalpel. But I didn't realize it back then. I was too young. I was too spiritually immature. If I would have only given God the chance, I wouldn't have gotten so anxious and frustrated and mad at God. I would have just realized that, hey, God is not saying no. He's saying, not now. Just wait to see what I've got in mind.
Right. What is the importance of courage in prayer?
Well, you know, it's been said, you know, there's another paradox, because we know that fear can help us sometimes. You know, it's been said that if God sends you tribulations, he wants you to tribulate. In other words, we're not supposed to run from fear. We're supposed to go through it and with God's help come out stronger. And we know this is true. Fear can help us grow. It can help us to mature. It can protect us. It can focus us. It can make us sharper. It can keep us on our toes, you know, spiritually and emotionally and physically. It can prepare us and prune us and make us stronger. Most importantly, fear can it can make us more reliant on God, which can make us more humble, and it can make us closer, bring us closer to God. Now, what's bad, and what the Bible always warns against, is anxiety. Anxiety is a chronic, heightened, extended sense of fear and worry about the future. And this often causes physical and spiritual paralysis that can prevent us from doing what we're supposed to do in life, prevent us from doing God's will. And that's a very important decision. Fear can be good because it can make us take action and drive us to our knees in prayer. But anxiety is paralyzing. Anxiety leads to hopelessness and doubt and panic. So the bottom line is that while God allows and even desires that we tribulate once in a while when he sends us tribulations, he knows it takes very little real terror to help us to grow. And he knows there's a fine line between the benefit we could derive from fear and the paralysis that results from anxiety. So from the moment we start experiencing fear, while we should thank God in some way for allowing that, he also wants us to immediately pray for courage to combat anxiety. And courage is one of the most important of all the virtues, because it's the linchpin of everything we do. Without courage, not only can you not be a hero or something, but you can't even practice any of the other virtues, because it takes courage and bravery to fight your way through temptation. So without courage, you can't be generous. You can't be magnanimous. You can't be wise. You can't be any of those things, because all of them take perseverance. So courage is very, very important.
Yeah, you point out that praying for courage doesn't just give you a temporary boost. It sets the stage for significant growth. And you point out that God can guide us through the process so that you will never lose hope. How might God guide us through the process?
Well, he can lead you to the right therapist. If you're not praying, you might not find the right therapist. If you are praying, you might find the right therapist, the right medication, the right lawyer, the right doctor, the right friend that God will send to you, or he'll send an angel to give you an inspiration. You know, if you're praying, he will help you through your friends and through relatives and through family and through strangers like doctors and lawyers and psychological professionals. Okay, he'll help you in that, and through angels to give you the inspiration to find the help you need. He's not going to just remove the problem for you. He's not going to just magically remove the problem. He wants you to go through it and take part in the solution yourself, but he will help guide you. And the thing is, if you don't pray for it, you might not get that guidance.
Right, right. You write, each miracle that Jesus worked was a divine invitation, or quote-unquote nudge, aimed at shifting people's focus from the miracle itself to God's power and love. So what is the paradox in faith?
Well, the paradox in faith has to do with persistent faith versus decisive faith. And this is very hard for people to grasp. How can we be both persistent, which involves continually asking and seeking and knocking, all of which implies a kind of uncertainty about whether God will answer us or not, while also having a decisive faith, which by definition means, you know, being unwavering and confident that God is going to answer us. You know, it seems like we're being asked to do two opposite things at once. On the one hand, we're being encouraged to storm the gates of heaven with our prayer every day in the hopes that God might grant our request. In the Gospel of Luke, for example, Jesus tells the story of the widow who pesters the unjust judge until he finally relents. And Jesus tells us to imitate her perseverance. Okay. On the other hand, we're asked to believe that from the moment we've uttered our prayer, God has already heard it, and that he's known from all eternity that we would need something badly and that we would come to him to rescue us. So, for instance, we see Jesus saying things like, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. That's confident faith. That's decisive faith. So the question is, how do we do both at the same time? And I think the solution to this paradox is to understand what true faith really is. And this is a very, very important point that many people don't understand. True faith isn't an emotional feeling that we have to keep up. It's not about experiencing euphoria or optimism or certainty that we're going to get what we pray for. Like forgiveness and like love, true faith is an act of the will. It's a decision to trust God no matter what. It's choosing to place our confidence in God's goodness and power and his willingness to help us, even when our emotions are all over the place. I mean, we know our emotions can fluctuate wildly like a roller coaster. They propel us from highs to lows, driving us to all kinds of extremes. You know, the point is our faith must be able to survive our mood. So we have to pray with persistence, but we also have to be calm as well. Don't try to feel faith. Think faith and keep thinking it. That's something you can always do no matter what mood you're in. Just keep deciding that you believe. That's the kind of persistence that makes us stronger and purifies us. And if you persist in that way without trying to work yourself up into some kind of emotional, spiritual frenzy, then you'll be living out this paradox of faith, and that's when miracles start to happen.
But there's nothing wrong with getting emotional about your faith.
No, no, not at all. There's nothing emotional. Look, if you believe in God and you believe in the good news of the gospel, and that God is going to bring good out of bad situations, and that after this very hard life we're living, we're going to be able to go to heaven and see our loved ones forever, and not just see them in a spiritual way, but in a physical way. We're going to be able to run up to our mothers and fathers and hug them and kiss them and feel the warmth of their skin and hear their voices again. If you have that, of course, if God gives you the grace to be wildly enthusiastic, then sure, do that. Okay, and yes, sometimes there are going to be times when we feel sorrowful, and that's okay too. The point is that God doesn't require faith to be over-emotional. He just requires you to say, I trust in you, God. I believe in you, God. I believe in your power to help me and your willingness to help me.
What role might the devil have? You address that in the book.
Well, the devil is a saying, the devil fishes in troubled waters.
Yes.
And this is one of the reasons why I spoke about anxiety before and why anxiety is so bad. When we're experiencing anxiety, we are paralyzed and we have no hope. And that prevents us from doing God's will. And when the devil sees that we're paralyzed and that we're shaking from fear, he loves to exploit those situations. He loves at those particular moments to tempt us. Just like angels tempt us to good things, the devil and his demons will tempt us to bad thoughts. And he'll smuggle the thought into your mind that this fear that you're experiencing is going to be forever. This anxiety is going to be forever. God is not listening to you. You don't count. You're committing the same sins over and over again. Why would God help you? You know, he'll say those things and whip you more and more and more into this hopeless doubt and panic and fear. And then you're really going to be paralyzed and you won't be able to move, much less do anything good, much less take the action you need to take with God's help to overcome your problems.
Let me read us out to the news when we take our next break. You write, don't underestimate the devil's grasp of this phenomenon. He's very adept at exploiting our feelings. Indeed, one of his most effective strategies is to convince us to act based on our emotions rather than on reasoned decisions. By doing this, he aims to draw us away from our higher nature. You write also, the faith required to obtain a miracle is more like the normal self-forgetful faith you use to live rationally in the world and go about your daily routine than it is like the passionate hallelujahs you sometimes hear in church or the sobbing supplications to God that people make to spare them from this or that calamity. We'll take this break. We'll be back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Anthony DiStefano. He's written a book titled The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. He's written many previous books, and there's more to come. Let me just read a couple passages from the book in terms of just tuning in now to give you some sense of where we're at, and we'll show you where we're going. He writes, in terms of obtaining the miracle you want, there's no need for any great fanfare, either negative or positive. For at least the time it takes to pray, do your best just to sit there quietly and get in touch with your intellect and your free will, those parts of your soul made in the image and likeness of God. In the context of biblical miracles, faith often refers to belief in God's power and promises, while trust implies a personal reliance on God and surrender to his providential care. Jesus seems to impose both conditions when he performs many of his miracles. Anthony, how does one abandon him or herself to God's divine will?
Well, that's a hard, hard thing for us to do, many of us to do, because, you know, it's hard to let go. You know, a lot of us have problems with needing control. You know, I'm that way myself. I like to be in control of things. It's very hard to let to let go and let God. This is one of the big paradoxes in the spiritual life. On the one hand, we are expected to act. We're expected to go to the doctor when we're sick. We're expected to call our lawyer when we're in legal trouble. We're expected to fight injustice when we see it. We have to use all our talents to solve our problems. You know, you can't just sit back and do nothing. you have to fulfill your obligations in life. You can't be completely passive and expect God to do all the work, because he's not. You know, he gave you those gifts for a reason. But at the same time, that when you're done with doing all you can do, that's when you have to let go. You have to relinquish. You have to trust that whatever the outcome you're working for and praying for, it's ultimately in God's hands. You have to try to be at peace, even if you're afraid that things might not turn out the way you hope. In other words, you have to say what Jesus Christ said in the Garden of Gethsemane: "Not my will, but your will be done." So with every other paradox of faith, this isn't an either-or situation. It's both. You know, just like a sailor who trims the sails of his boat while letting the wind do the work, we're called to act, but at the same time to be resting completely in the Lord. As St. Augustine said, pray as though everything depended on God, work as though everything depended on you. That's the balance we're trying to achieve in the spiritual life and in the Christian life. And I think that's the sweet spot when it comes to obtaining miracles. And some of us, like I said, who are, we're doers, we're movers, we're shakers, we're control freaks. It's very hard for us to relinquish power to God. On the other hand, there are people who are the opposite. They're all too willing to relinquish everything and not get off their keisters and do what they're supposed to do. You got to do both. That's the paradox if you want miracles to come true.
And if despite your best efforts, all your hopes and dreams seem to be dashed, you have to accept that is a part of God's plan for you. The most important thing you can do is get control of your will and place yourself in God's hands. That's what you recommend.
That's right. I mean, and look, Jesus did it himself. He was in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is one of the greatest mysteries of our faith. Jesus is God. And yet, at the last minute, when he knew he had to go through the crucifixion the next day, he asked God to let this cup pass from me, he said. In other words, he didn't want to go through the pain and the suffering of the crucifixion. But at the same time, he said, "Not my will, but your will be done." And what happened? Well, the crucifixion went on as scheduled, as we all know. But what happened as a result of that, as a result of Jesus trusting in his Father, putting all his faith and not faith, but his trust in the will of the Father? Well, not only did he rise from the dead, but he opened up the gates of heaven for all of us. He reconciled God to man. He made it possible for good to come from bad situations. All of that is a result of the cross, and it all results from surrendering to the will of the Father. And that's right. Power. And we always have to remember that Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane is the model for all miracle prayers.
You write, and most people would probably believe the first part of these two sentences and struggle with the second. You write, there is no certainty about life and death. Most people understand that, but they may not believe that each day is truly and literally a gift.
That's right. I mean, look, I could have a brain aneurysm tonight. You know, I can get off this program and I could have a stroke or a heart attack. Or tomorrow morning, I can get up and go outside and I could get hit by a bus. You know, I don't care how healthy I am. I don't care how many vitamins and minerals and supplements I take. I don't care how much I exercise. I don't care what I do to try to prolong my life. When my number's up, my number's up. You know, the same God that gave you the morning does not promise you the evening. And so that's why if people had more of a grateful, appreciative attitude, the kind that the British writer G.K. Chesterton talked about, they'd be much more happy because they would realize that every single day truly is a gift. And we rely on God even for our next breath. There's nothing truer in the world. And I think that's the greatest lesson for us to learn. We have to plan long range. We have to plan as if we're going to live. But at the same time, our bags always have to be packed spiritually. We always have to be ready to meet our Maker and face judgment. That's the balance.
And the Winston Churchill quote that you have would probably fit what you just said. When you're going through hell, the best thing to do is keep going, keep going.
That's right. I have to tell a lot of people come to me for advice because I've written these books. I'm not a licensed therapist by any means, but because I've written 30 books, I get all kinds of emails and all kinds of phone calls and letters telling me that people are telling me that they're going through these terrible problems and they think that the problems are never going to end. They think that this is the way it's going to be forever. But that's not the case. It's not going to be that way forever. I don't care what kind of problem you have, okay? If you're praying to God, God is either going to shield you from the danger you're facing, or he's going to give you the strength to make it through, okay? Either way, though, you know, you're going to get through. And Winston Churchill, the great, you know, a British prime minister during World War II, you know, he said, if you're going through the best thing to do, if you're going through hell, is to keep going. In other words, the way you show God that you trust him is by soldiering through, not letting your problems consume all your thoughts and emotions and activities. You show your trust in God by forcing yourself not to think about your problems every single minute of the day, but letting him think about the problems. Do what you have to do to solve the problems, but once you've done all that you can do, then you give it to him. And you just get through the day, you get to nighttime, your reward is to go to sleep and get to the next day. You put your cross in the corner by your bed, go to sleep, and when you get up, your cross will still be there, but get through the day. Shorten your time frame. Just try to get through the 24-hour period. Christ said, God gives us strength for the day. The day. He didn't say he's going to give you graces for the week and the month. He's going to give you the strength to get through today and to give you your daily bread. So shorten your time frame when you're going through all kinds of problems. And just focus on getting through the day. And don't worry, the problem will pass.
You recap the miracle paradox by writing, when you're going through anxiety or grieving, you should do everything you're supposed to do, but at the same time, make a decision to surrender to God's will. And there are signs, aren't there, that something deeper is going on in our life.
That's right. Every time we go through suffering, God is trying to do something with us. He's trying to prune us. Every suffering that we go through, even if we've brought on the suffering ourselves, even if we're to blame, God is trying to prune us. And why does he prune us like the way you prune a plant? Because he wants you to be more fruitful. He wants you to be more fruitful in his kingdom. And you may not know it at the time, but the more fruit, the more life you have. And so sometimes when you're suffering, we hate it with every bone of our body. But God is actually trying to give you more life, because when you're suffering, you're going to be struggling, and you're going to be closer to God. You're going to be depending on God. Dependence on God equals intimacy with God. And that's going to result in more love, and more love is always more life. So, yes, dismiss all anxiety from your mind, because God has got a purpose, and we have to trust that he sees the bigger picture. We can't see the bigger picture. There's a bigger picture that we can't see.
You're right. God always has something deeper in mind when he performs miracles. If you need a miracle, especially a healing of some kind, you need to look inside yourself and see if there's something else that needs to be healed too. What is it about your own character that God might want you to change?
That's right. Well, if you read the Bible, if you read the Gospels, you'll see that every time Jesus performed a miracle, you know, he was always more concerned with the inner person. He was always more concerned with the state of the person's soul. That's why he performed these miracles. That's why he said, your sins are forgiven, before and after he performed certain miracles. He's always, the point of miracles is not to just show how mighty God is. It's to nudge us. It's to point us. It's to bring us back to him. He knows, you know, he created the world. He created us. Why did he create us? So that we could, that he could share the love that he has. So that we could, that he could share the joy that he has. And he created this big, beautiful universe. And we're supposed to be able to find out, just from looking at the universe, we should know that God is great and we owe everything to him. But because the universe is so big and because we see it every day, a lot of us have grown very familiar with it. And, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. And so we're not grateful. We're not grateful for every breath. So what can God do when that happens, when we're turning against God? We're turning to the world and away from God. Well, if he could allow us to experience suffering, and then we get afraid, and there's no atheists in foxholes, as they say, and sometimes that turns us back. Or he can grant us a miracle, and a miracle is like a startling exception to the rule that jolts us out of our complacency and makes us realize that, yes, there is a God, that this universe of ours, this big, beautiful universe, is not something just created from the laws of physics, but it's the result of a mind, of a personal God who loves us. So, yes, every time God performs a miracle, he always wants it to be accompanied by a change in your soul. You have to be willing to change and to be more holy.
And you're right, we're called to be our best selves. If you are a mature person and have accumulated the slightest bit of wisdom in life, you know that the way you are now is not necessarily your best self. The most efficacious method of increasing your chances of getting the miracle you desire, you must die to yourself and be reborn a new person. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, you know, stated in, that's very hard. You know, dying to yourself, it sounds so scary.
Yes.
But in biblical terms, it's the same as Christ's teaching that if you want to gain your life, you first must lose it. That's a paradox, which we've been talking about. It means that the path to your true identity, your true self, the person God created you to be, begins with dying to your false self here. We're not talking about some kind of self-help technique. We're not talking about simply tweaking a few habits or substituting them with more productive ones. This is about total transformation. The paradox really comes down to this. The more you cling to your ego and your pride and your sinfulness, the more you lose your true identity. But if you let go, if you surrender to God and you say you're sorry for the sins that you've committed, and you commit to being a new person, then you'll create a better version of yourself than you ever imagined. Then you'll become the person God wants you to be. And in the process, ironically, paradoxically, you'll get more peace and joy than you ever had before. So dying to yourself essentially is not scary. It means killing off the worst parts of yourself, specifically the selfishness, the shortcomings, the sins that are actually blurring your vision and restricting your ability to live as fully and authentically as you're meant to live by God. And the parable of the prodigal son, by the way, is the perfect example of this. When the prodigal son comes to his senses and returns to the father after squandering all his inheritance on riotous living, he wasn't just welcomed home by his father. He was restored to life. You know, what does it say? That he was lost and he became found. He was dead and he became alive again. That's the meaning of being born again. That's what the paradox is really about. Real life comes about when we die to our old self. Real self-discovery doesn't come from asserting the worst part, the egotistical part of ourselves, more forcefully, but in letting go and allowing God to shape us into the people that we were meant to be from all eternity.
Yeah, going back to the point, there is no certainty about life and death. Each day is truly and literally a gift. And God wants us to trust him, and the goal should be to get through one day at a time.
That's right. Sure. Well, if you're going through a terrible problem, for sure, What that means, it doesn't mean you should just focus on that. You can, of course, you have to plan long range. You have to, if you have a, you know, a physical problem, you have to, you know, plan the doctor's appointment next week. We're not saying just focus on the day. We're saying if you're going through a problem, a difficulty, a real stress, a crippling anxiety, the kind that you want to just go to bed and pull the covers over your head, then you just shorten your time frame and say to yourself, I'm just going to get through the day. Sometimes it's even less. Sometimes you have to say, I'm just going to get through the next 2 hours. Some people have anxiety so bad and depression so bad that they just have to get through the day until they finally get that therapist or that kind of medication or whatever they need to help them. So, yes, get through the day if you're going through really hard problems.
And what's necessary, you write, is to break away from our past and renounce our sins. That if you don't change the pattern of your behavior and try to grow in spiritual union with God, you might even be destroying yourself. Your quote-unquote true self is found only in Jesus Christ. It's not enough to have a guilty conscience about the bad things we've done in the past.
That's right. People don't understand sometimes that sinning isn't just breaking rules. It's the act of offending God, doing things wrong in God's eyes, not necessarily in your eyes. And sinning causes a kind of spiritual chaos in our souls, a disintegration. It separates us on three levels, really. First, it separates us from ourselves, from our true selves, the selves that we're supposed to be in God's eyes, what we just talked about. Second, it separates us from other people. It often, when we sin, it causes friction and sometimes havoc. You know, we see family problems all the time when we start messing up in our personal relationships. Finally, it separates us from God, who is the opposite of sin. You know, so every single time we sin, those three divisions take place, and it affects us. Christ said that a house divided against itself cannot stand. So what do you think happens when we keep chopping ourselves up in this fashion over a long period? We hurt ourselves badly. We collapse. We implode. Nobody has to tell us to feel unhappy. Nobody has to tell us to feel guilty. It just happens on its own because it's built into our nature.
Let me read us out to our next break. You write, sinning, simply defined, and this is under the title, The Key to Self-Transformation. Sinning, simply defined, is the act of offending God. It's doing things that are wrong in God's eyes, not necessarily in our eyes. Sinning causes a kind of spiritual chaos in our soul, a disintegration, a division. It separates us on three levels. First, it separates us from ourselves, from who we truly are in God's eyes. Second, it separates us from other people, causing friction and sometimes even havoc in our personal relationships. And then finally, it separates us from God, who is the very opposite of sin. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. at DSW Stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Back. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify with Anthony DiStefano talking about his latest book, The Miracle Book, Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. He writes, no matter what religion you practice, there's really nothing more important that you can do than ask God for forgiveness. Does that mean you're going to be suddenly perfect? Of course not. God doesn't expect you to turn into a saint overnight. As long as you sincerely desire to turn back to God, you can be forgiven. You don't have the power to change without the help of your Father. And he continues a little bit later, Christ wants you to really, quote unquote, die to yourself in order for you to become your true self. Tell us a little bit about the meaning of that paradox.
Well, you know, I spoke a little bit about that before, but I want to highlight one thing. People don't understand why it's so important that we don't sin. They think that when different churches tell us about commandments, that it's like God has a baseball bat ready to hit us over the head
right. If
we do something wrong, and that's not the way it works. The truth is that, you know, if you turn away from God, and that's what sinning is. Sinning is turning away from God. If you turn away from God, then you turn away from everything God is. So if God is light and you turn away from him by sinning, then what? You're going to be immersed in darkness. If God is goodness and you turn away from goodness, well, what are you going to be in the middle of? Evil. If God is love, and you turn away from love, well, what are you going to be in the middle of? Hate and isolation and loneliness. If God is order, which God is, and you turn away from order, then your life is going to be very messy and chaotic. And that's what happens when we sin. Nobody has to tell us to feel guilty. Nobody has to tell us to feel bad. It's just we're turning away from the source of life and love and light and order and goodness. And that's why our lives start falling apart when we start sinning. And the only rational way out of it is to turn around, say you're sorry, and start walking back to God, who is light and goodness and that. And it's very, very easy to do. You know, Christ did the hard work of salvation 2,000 years ago when he died on the cross for us. He made the forgiveness of sins possible. Before Christ died on the cross, it was impossible to go to heaven. There was no heaven for us to go to. It was impossible to be redeemed. But since he did that, he reconciled God and man, and now he gave us the antidote to sin. Okay, and all we have to do is take the antidote. And how do you take the antidote? By saying, I'm sorry. It's very, very simple. Say you're sorry. If you're a Catholic, you go to confession because we believe in that sacrament. But basically, it just comes down to saying you're sorry.
You write that Christ really wants you to die to your old self in order to become your true best self. To summarize, why did God create the world and everyone in it to share his love? Why does God perform miracles, big and small? You write to make us realize that God is the source of all good things, to increase our faith in Him so we will repent, transform, grow in union with Him, and help others do the same so that we can all share His love here and later in the world to come.
That's right. That's why God did everything. That's why God created us. That's why God created the universe. That's why God performs miracles. Look, God could have created us as computers. He could have made us automatrons. He could have made us into smartphones. And in that case, we would have just done His will all the time because we would have been programmed. But God didn't want that. He wanted to make it possible for us to have free will. Why? So that we could choose God freely. That kind of life is more like His life. That's life made in His image and likeness, that we have an intellect and a free will. So that's why the purpose of this life is to keep choosing God and keep enlarging our souls, that when we get to heaven, hopefully someday, our souls will be so big that they can hold more and more and more joy. That's the whole point of going through tribulations, right, to keep choosing God. And sometimes, though, we don't choose God. We choose the opposite. We choose the world because of all the temptations out there. And so what does God do? Either He permits us to suffer, and when we suffer, we often turn back to God because we're afraid, or He performs little miracles for us so that He gives us a nudge. He nudges us in the right direction. He doesn't force us. He doesn't put a blazing cross in the sky to make us believe in Him. But He does these things, these weird coincidences that make us realize that He does exist. And we're nudged back in His direction.
In chapter 9, it's titled Personal Relationship versus Community. And you write, the essence of Christian transformation is something that Protestants and Catholics agree on, the need to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The idea of quote-unquote relationship is crucial because it has the power to turn a mere set of beliefs into a living, dynamic, intimate connection with God. And then you point out that Catholics and Protestants do have different perspectives.
That's right. I mean, we believe in that. But Catholics and Protestants both believe in the importance of relationship. The whole purpose of life is union with God. That's what heaven is. Heaven is union with God. So if heaven is union with God, then the purpose of our life here is to be in greater union with God so that heaven can actually begin here. The seeds for our life in heaven are here on earth to the extent that we are in union with God. But how can you have union with God without a relationship? Now, Protestants, they often highlight the subjective dimension of the relationship. They focus on private, personal prayer, Bible reading, the sense of walking with Jesus as a friend, speaking with Him to seek His guidance. Catholics do the same thing, the very same thing. But we have something else, too. We have the sacraments, especially the sacrament of reconciliation and the Eucharist. In the sacrament of the Eucharist, Catholics believe that they can receive Jesus in a very tangible way. We believe that the Eucharist isn't just a symbol, but it's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. So when we receive the Eucharist in a worthy, faith-filled way, that's the most intimate, personal encounter that you could have with God this side of heaven. But we agree that personal relationship is the most important thing. At the same time, though, there's another side to that paradox, and that's that as important as the personal belief in God and relationship is, we also believe that there's something called the community of believers. To be a Christian means that you're part of a family, a wider family. That's why when Jesus taught us to pray, He didn't just say to us to say, "My Father who art in heaven." He told us to say, "Our Father who art in heaven." He told His disciples, "When two or three of you gather in My name, I'm with them." And that's what St. Paul referred to when he talked so often of the body of Christ. So believing in God is not just a one-on-one affair. It involves the whole community of believers. And having a personal relationship with the Lord, while essential, is never an excuse for self-absorption, self-centeredness, and isolation.
Another important one is you point out that we do not worship Mary.
That's right.
Often misunderstood. Why do you believe we should be precise in our prayers when we ask God for miracles?
Well, look, precision shows that God, that we trust him with the intimate details of our life, just like we would trust a close friend. If the goal of a Christian is to have a personal relationship with the Lord, we have to share those kind of details. That's what relationship is all about, sharing. Also, when we make specific requests, we're acknowledging that God isn't just Lord of the church we belong to. He's the Lord of our families. He's the Lord of our finances. He's the Lord of our vacations. He's the Lord of our taxes. He's the Lord of our bedrooms. You know. So, and finally, when we pray precisely, we're acknowledging that God doesn't just view our lives from a distance, like that old song says, but that he's right here with us right now, deeply involved, that he cares about everything we care about. But paradoxically, at the same time that we're being precise, we simultaneously have to be open to God's will. And the reason, as we discussed earlier, is that we don't always know what's truly best for us, even when we're praying with great sincerity. In fact, many times we don't even know what we want. So our desires are always, they seem real to us, but they're always wrapped up in emotions and influenced by fear and pride and desire and pain and ambition. Openness to God's will shows that we trust God because he can see the big picture. He can see the future, and he wants what's best for us, not just in the moment, but forever. And when you embrace this miracle paradox by being precise in your prayer, yet radically open to God's providence, all the channels of grace-filled divine possibility are opened up to you. And isn't that exactly the way Jesus Christ prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane? That's the way he was able to save humanity and open up the gates of heaven for all of us.
Tell us about the last of God's miracle paradoxes, which you believe may be the most important of all.
I think the most important one is just that, what I just said, that you've got to be open to God's will while being precise. You have to trust that God knows what's best. When you are completely open, you're being most Christ-like. You're being the way Christ was in the Garden of Gethsemane. You're saying, not my will, but your will be done. What happened when he did that? When he did that, he opened up the gates of heaven for us. He made it possible for us to go to heaven. That means we're going to live forever. It doesn't matter what the atheists think. We know this is true. Our life on this earth doesn't end just because we die. Our life goes on, and it goes on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And someday, after the resurrection, there's going to be a physical component to heaven. That means that it's going to be colorful, and it's going to be more life and more activity and more love, not less. If the life we're living here is real, the life in heaven is going to be more real than that. And that means, as I said earlier, that someday after the resurrection, when you see your mother again, even if she's died so long ago, you're not going to just be seeing a ghost. You're going to be seeing a real person. And you're going to be able to run up to her and hug her and kiss her and feel the warmth of her skin and hear her voice again. That's what heaven is. And that's what Jesus Christ did for us by dying on the cross. So being open to God's will is what led to us being able to go to heaven. And it shows us that, look, what's the worst thing that ever happened in the history of the world? The murder of Christ, the murder of God. That wasn't just homicide or genocide. It was deicide. The murder of God. But what happened 3 days later? The resurrection. That wasn't just one good thing. It was the greatest thing that ever happened in the world because it opened up the gates of heaven for us. Well, if God could bring the best thing out of the worst thing, then he could certainly take all the painful, terrible, horrible, and irritating things that happen to us in our life and bring blessings out of them. That's why we can pray and be precise as we want with God, but we have to be radically, radically open to God's will. When we do that, that's when miracles start to happen, because that's when unexpected things start to happen.
And they happen in your life. You write that God had, quote-unquote, refused you twice, but by then I was older and really lost in the wilderness. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I tried everything. Then somewhere at some time in my 20s, after years of being away from the faith, I started to get more interested in Christianity. About that time, I read a book by C.S. Lewis called The Screwtape Letters. It made a powerful impression on me. Tell us a little bit about that change.
Well, you know, I was on a train in a train going from London up to Lancashire in England. It's a long train ride, and I had purchased this book in the Westminster Library, Westminster Bookstore, and I read it from cover to cover, and then I started it over again. I had never been so impressed with a spiritual book before. It was clever, it was funny, it made me think, it was deep, but it was funny too, and I was so entertained by it, and I thought, my goodness. I know I have a talent to write, and I'm starting to believe more in Christianity. If I could write a book that can have this kind of effect on people, nowhere as good as C.S. Lewis, of course. He's one of the greats. I'm not yet anyway. If I could do that, then that will give great meaning to my life. And as I said before, I had earlier wanted to be a doctor, and it was a revelation I had that maybe God was calling me to be a healer and not a surgeon. And as a result of that, I made a decision to be a writer. And that was, now that 30 books later, I'm on your program.
Right.
And I'm talking to your listeners. And I can't imagine a more fulfilling life than I've had writing these books for adults and children, helping people get miracles. I mean, how great is that? Someone out there listening right now who needs a miracle, and maybe they get a miracle because they start praying this way. That validates my whole life. So that's what openness to God's will did for me.
And you believe that we stand on the cusp of a new age of miracles.
Well, yes, I do. You know, the first age of miracles happened back 2,000 years ago during the early apostolic times in the times of the church fathers. Back then, bona fide miracles weren't exceptions to the rule. They happened all the time. They were a constant part of life. You know, Jesus and the apostles and the early Christians, they healed the sick, they raised the dead, they cast demons out as a normal part of their ministry. That's why the early church was able to grow so rapidly, even in the face of a terrible persecution. Now, 2,000 years later, I think we're on the verge of a new age of miracles for similar reasons. Because Christianity, in fact, spirituality in general, is being persecuted all over the globe. In the West, it's being persecuted not with lions and gladiators, but with ridicule and censorship and legal threats and the cancel culture and intense social pressure. You know, from Hollywood, they think that we're bigoted. They think that, you know, we're old-fashioned and all of that. And some in the secular culture are openly hostile to basic Christian teachings that we have, and the attacks are relentless. And in this toxic environment, my fear is that words alone might not be enough to bring people back to the faith. We need something more, something miraculous. It makes perfect sense to me that God would accompany a new effort at evangelization during a time of persecution with a fresh wave of miracles. So I think people now shouldn't just ask for one miracle. They should ask for 5 miracles. They should ask for 10 miracles. They should take advantage of this time of persecution that we're living in, when our values and our beliefs are being ridiculed by the secular culture, and use that during this time of purification to get as many miracles as possible.
And in your conclusion, you write about the miracle prayer. What is the miracle prayer as you view it?
Well, what I did is I took all of these paradoxes that I've talked about and we've talked about in this program, and I put them all together in the conclusion. It's a distillation of everything that's in the book. It incorporates all the paradoxes, all the conditions for being granted miracles that Christ seemed to require, into one comprehensive, theologically sound prayer that can be printed out, scanned, saved on your smartphone, and then prayed anytime, anywhere. I really wanted to give people something lasting, something they could hold on to and pray regularly, even after finishing the book. It's not some sort of a miracle. It's not some sort of a superstitious formula. It involves all these difficult things that we've talked about, and people could have it and pray it everywhere and anywhere. So that's why I put everything together.
It was concluded by this final petition. Lord, help me to be as sincere, transparent, and precise as possible in expressing my needs to you, as I would with my closest friends and family. But also help me to remain completely open to your divine wisdom in fulfilling my request knowing your power to perceive the deepest yearnings of my soul and to grant them to me in the most unexpected ways. And so there's a sense in which the miracle prayer, when you put it all together, is really our prayer too, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. And I would say that if you're at the end of your rope right now, you're listening to this program and you need a miracle, first you have to understand that God knows what you're going through. He's known from all eternity that you would need a miracle and that you'd be listening to this program. He cares about you. Keeping that in mind, I would say that there are four things you have to do. First of all, when you're experiencing anxiety, you got to try to take a breath and be calm. As the Psalms say, be still and know that I'm God. Okay, don't think faith, don't feel faith, think faith. We all know faith is the most important biblical requirement for a miracle, but instead of getting all worked up emotionally, make a decisive act of the will to trust God. Second, make a definitive decision to be sorry for all your sins, okay? That Christ said, if you want to gain your life, you must first lose it. In the Bible, Jesus uses miracles to turn sinners around. His miracles were always signs of transformation of a person's soul. So if you need a miracle, then you got to clear the deck spiritually. Ask God for forgiveness. Be willing to change. That's what God wants most, so do it. Fourth, what you just said, be radically open to God's will. Tell him exactly what you want. Be clear and precise, but echo the words of God, of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but your will be done. That's not surrender. That kind of surrender isn't weakness. It's spiritual power. And finally, when you pray for your specific miracle intention, be sure to pray for God's glory too. This is so important, people always forget it. In other words, ask God to use your miracle to deepen the faith of the people around you, to make them realize that God is responsible for the great blessing you're receiving, not you. When you seek God's glory in your prayers, then that reflects not only a more humble disposition, but a mature faith, and one more worthy of deserving a miracle.
Our guest has been Anthony Stefano. The title of the book is The Miracle Book. Anthony, I hope maybe we can get together again with the frequent writing that you do. I'm sure there'd be something our audience would like to hear.
I hope so, Father. Thank you.
Blessings on you and all your loved ones.
Same to you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
So just couple thoughts in closing. He writes, I believe that now that we've come to the end of this book, my main point I want to leave you with is that you should have great hope in God's power and willingness to help you. Indeed, I don't believe God would have led you to this book if he didn't have something wonderful planned for you in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. My one fear is that we may have focused too much on the idea of seeking miracles for the purpose of staving off something bad. In other words, we think about miracles so often in a negative way because we need help to escape some kind of terrible evil, be it physical, emotional, relational, or financial. It's only human to focus on the problems we have, and yet we can't forget that the whole point of miracles is to awaken us to the larger miracles of creation and life and God's incarnation in Jesus Christ. And the point of those miracles is to help us to know, love, and serve God so that we can be happy with him forever in heaven. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone. And certainly come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.